This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Some breaking news for you. Michigan Radio's Rick Pluter reports that Governor Snyder has signed that controversial package of legislation to restructure Detroit's public schools. Among other things, the $617 million package splits the district into two entities, one that takes on the old district's debt and the other to run the schools and educate students. And it would return the district to a locally elected school board next year. The package passed the legislature earlier this month on largely party lines. Over to school boards around Michigan, where the help wanted sign is out because there's a shortage of candidates for school boards. Some 1,600 seats in 540 districts are up for grabs in the November election, with a filing deadline of July 26. Now, last time around, in 2014, about 70 seats in local school boards went begging. They had no takers. Here with us now are the holders of two school board seats that will need to be filled this November. Both are longtime school board members, and both are not running for re-election. Carol Klainau has served on the Utica Community School Board for 23 years, 21 of them as board president. Carol, welcome.
Well, thank you, Cynthia. It's great to be here.
Howard Wallach has been on the Farmington Public Schools Board since 2004. He is currently the president of the school board. So good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time to really share your experiences. And I want to start with you, Carol. Why have you decided not to run for re-election?
Well, honestly, 23 years is a lot of community service, and I think I've done my fair share, and it's time to pass the baton.
How about you?
It's not that I'm not running. My term actually ends in December of 2018. So I have resigned my seat, and therefore it has to be filled by the board, and then that candidate has to run in November because of the timing of things.
Why did you resign?
A similar kind of reason, actually. I have been involved in various organizations. I'm Jewish, and I was involved in four different Jewish communal organizations for many years and took leadership roles in them and then became a school board member. So I've got about 30, 32 years of public service in one fashion or another, and just felt like it was time.
You both really have that kind of sense of it's time to lay down my arms and let someone else pick up that shield. I want to start with you, Howard. In the 12 years perspective you have on your school board, how have things changed?
I think the focus on finances has been dramatic. Obviously, it's important. We always looked at it. We spent time on it. You have to balance your budget by June 30 in Michigan under Michigan law, even though the legislature sometimes doesn't pass their budget until October or November or later, which is the craziest system you can imagine because that's where we get our money from. But the focus on finance has increased dramatically over the past 12 years. We used to have resources that we could try some experimental programs, do some innovative kinds of things. That kind of money's gone. You don't have the ability to do those kinds of things anymore. Much more time every year is spent on it because the state has the ability, even though they might tell you in May, in anticipation of you passing your June budget, that we're going to increase your allocation by $100, $150, $75 a student, they can take it back in the middle of the school year.
So you could wind up starting in the hole as the year starts?
Not could happen. It has happened to us.
That is tough. What have you seen? You certainly have the perspective of your 23 years, Carol.
Howard very accurately describes what's happened. Proposal A was going to herald a whole new world of school funding in Michigan. And Proposal A, as we all know, looking back, is a funding mechanism that really works well in good times. Nobody could have anticipated the economy as things played out in the last decade in Michigan. But Proposal A just isn't working for today's economy and today's system. What I have seen is in the 90s, things were going very well. The economy is doing well. So there was good funding. But in addition, in Utica, there was rapid growth. There were years where we would grow by 500 to 700 children, which is a huge growth.
Yes.
And because the district was so large, we could take in that many kids. It was several years before we had to actually build buildings. So it was really very efficient for us, and things were good. In the last 10 years, of course, things have not been that good, again, for the reasons Howard cited. And now we are faced with not only the funding from the state not being adequate, but also we're now facing enrollment decline, as everybody else is. The birth rate went down in Macomb County for certain. I think statewide it plays out. So you're actually graduating several hundred more children than you are bringing in kindergarten. So for Utica, we're looking at about 400 children less as our students in the fall. And that has a significant impact on funding. When I read our Lansing update, at one point the governor was proposing that they would do a 50-50 split on student count to help with the declining districts. And my understanding now is they're going back to 90-10, which means for a district like Utica, 90% of the funding will be based on the fall count, which will make it very hard for us or other declining enrollment districts. That's probably $1 million swing in the budget we have to adopt June 30th. Even though we don't really know what our funding's going to be. So
as you describe this, I get this image of people climbing up a wall, and that wall is loaded with grease, and you kind of see slide that you can't get there. As you say, as you start the year and you're already in the hole.
Well, yeah, Proposal A has been particularly bad for larger districts, mm-hmm. because when you think about it, the larger districts used to fund their districts primarily through property taxes, and their voters voted on spending money how they wanted to on schools or not. So now all of our money is going to the state, and the rural districts who have smaller populations, it's been a windfall for them. Even in bad times, they're doing much better than the bigger districts are because they're getting the same amount of allocation, yet not contributing the same amount of money to the pool. Since 2003, the cost of living increase has been about 48%. In that same time period, our school district allocation has gone up a tiny bit and then in the last several years dropped and leveled off. So it's about 16%. Before we open our doors, we're 30% behind the eight ball. And then add all of the other problems that Lansing has in terms of trying to figure out how to run the pension fund and the changes that have happened in that. When we started with Proposal A, we were contributing 5% of every dollar that we got from the state to the pension fund. Now it's up over 27-28%. It's just not
sustainable
at all.
The other thing I'm interested in is your perspective on what you've seen over your years on the school board in terms of legislative involvement in school affairs. Carol?
I would describe it as legislative overreach in school affairs. People will talk about local control. I think Howard can certainly speak his own mind, but I think the only thing that's left for local control is what to cut. I mean, there are very few things now that a local school board can decide because most everything is legislated to the point that there's now legislation on how you evaluate your teachers, your administrators. We've gone to that level of prescription in terms of how you run your school district.
Why do you think this is? I'll make that a jump ball question. Why is this overreach the way it is?
Well, I think part of it is that there's an agenda by the leadership in Lansing about what they want to do with public education, and part of that is to get more of it into privatized schools. I think that's just absolutely clear. But what you're seeing is the attempt to implement a business model on a school system. Round peg in a square hole is the first analogy that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. It's good in business to have all kinds of metrics and analysis and things like that, but you've got people who are not educators legislating how to run a business that they don't know anything about.
Caroline, as you look at your years, your 23 years on a school board, you're feeling problems that predate Rick Snyder's time as governor.
Again, Proposal A is primarily the driver of some of this, and I just think it took 20 years to have it kind of come to fruition in terms of what happens in a down economy. Mm-hmm. Under the Snyder administration, things have accelerated, but going back to why is all of this happening, I think it goes back further because when the Obama administration was doing Race to the Top, which was competitive funding, the state wanted to compete for those funds, and in order to be competitive for those funds, there are certain things you had to have in place. Our legislature very quickly passed the legislation to meet the criteria to apply for Race to the Top money. We never got the money, but the legislation never went away. So the teacher evaluation, some of the other things. And then the state testing, of course, the parents are starting to really push back on that issue. There's just a lot of different things that have been driven by people outside of schools. The you must start school after Labor Day. Our parents aren't really happy about that. They'd prefer to maybe have the flexibility to start in August. I mean, so those little things, when you start adding them up, there's just very little that's left for local decision making. Our community hasn't quite figured all that out. As Howard mentioned, people are taxed locally. The money goes to Lansing for the school aid fund, and then it's redistributed through the legislature. And I am quite shocked and also concerned that our local citizens will, in anger when you're cutting something that they're not happy about, will say, but I pay taxes to Utica schools. And the answer is, well, you pay taxes to schools.
Right.
And the legislature decides where your money gets redistributed.
Dating right back to March 94 with Proposal mm-hmm. 8.
Yeah. Yes. And so they don't understand it, and they'll equate, oh, all these new homes are being built, so the school should be fine. No. So there's a lot of education in our part, and I think people just in their busy lives, especially if you have children in school, you're busy parents, I don't think they take the time to really learn about it until it affects them. And right now there's a lot of people being affected by school board decisions.
We're talking about the reality of serving on school boards mm-hmm. as we talk with mm-hmm. Carol Klina of the Utica Community School Board. She served for 23 years. Howard Wallach is with us with the Farmington Public Schools Board since 2004. Both not going to be continuing. Howard has resigned his seat. Carol, you are not going to run for re-election. And we know tough decisions have got to be made by school boards, whether it's closing a school or cut an effective program. Howard, what's the most difficult decision you've had to make?
Our board has gone through this now twice. The first time that we talked about privatization was about 3 or 4 years ago. We decided not to at that time. Our bargaining units were able to make concessions that made things work. And when you do that, you affect people whose jobs you are taking. You affect the community because in our district, many of our employees live in our district at all levels, whether they're bus drivers, custodians, teachers, administrators. And they rightfully say, you know, my little Johnny knows the bus driver, and I know that bus driver's going to be safe, driving safely with my child. And you're going to bring in people from the outside and all of those kinds of arguments. I think that's probably the toughest decision we have to make because you have to look squarely at people who you know and you like and you've seen and maybe have driven your kids or you work with if they're a custodian or a lunch person. So taking a person's job away is a very, very difficult one. Let me tag on to what Carol said a minute ago because you were asking about, you know, it's not all on Snyder's watch, mm-hmm. and I couldn't agree more. There's bipartisanship in terms of the problem that has gone on here. I'm going to take you back to 1994 when Governor Engler supported the change in public funding of schools with Proposal A, but there was a special exemption, and it was a line item called 20J in the budget. And 20J was a allocation that said, essentially, if your school district is already spending more money because your voters approved it than what the state's going to allocate, we're not going to take that money away from you. So we got about $2,000 per student for many years that other districts didn't have because we were already supporting our kids at a higher level. And in the swoop of a pen, Governor Granholm took that away from us 1 year because the school aid fund and the budget in general was in such bad shape. And that happened in October after we've already written our budget and approved it as required by law in June. It can be disastrous, and that year was.
What's your toughest decision in a nutshell, Carol?
I think any decision that has to do with people losing their jobs, I would rank the worst, mm-hmm. and I would agree with Howard. However, there's another side of the school board that is not as well observed, and that is when you have to render judgment in an appeal of an expulsion. I really find those difficult because in that setting, you have a family with their child who did something probably a poor decision. Often it's a good kid who just made a poor decision that one day, and the consequences are dire. And when you're sitting there listening to the family kind of explain the rationale for why we shouldn't uphold the recommendation to expel their child, it is just very, very difficult. Most times the facts are clear and you still have to uphold that expulsion decision or recommendation. Your heart goes out to them, and you do know that kids can just get a wild idea and do something, not thinking long term. And those, to me, are also very, very difficult decisions for a board.
Are either of you surprised there's a shortage of people willing to run for school boards in Michigan?
Absolutely not.
Not at all. I think it might fit the definition of thankless job. I don't know. I'm sure there's other jobs out there, but there's less and less influence on what you can do in the school district. You're not really shaping the district's direction to the extent you could have back mm-hmm. when I first started on the school board. It's just much more difficult and hard to find that intrinsic satisfaction because you're just making decisions that are painful.
I think there's another component, too, to that. The notion that what we see play out on the news every night about people in Lansing and people in Washington who are politicians and their behavior, some of which is very bad, trickles down into the local community where now although we can't raise a millage for operations, we might have to have a millage for a bond or buildings or technology or those kinds of things. And they're going to come to your school board and they're going to start screaming at you. And what do you see on TV at 11 o'clock is that little soundbite where somebody's screaming at a school board. And people are sitting back and saying, why would I take that job? Why would I stick my neck out and have to take that abuse when all they're trying to do is the best they can under the circumstances that exist at the time? I fully understand people aren't going to like every decision I make. And you know that going into taking this position. But it's a far cry from I disagree with you to abusiveness. And I think people see that that happens and they say there's no reason for me to take time away from my family or from my work or anything else that I'm doing.
Bottom line, as we wrap up, what will it mean if not enough people are willing to step up and take those empty seats on school boards?
I think one of the things that you'll see is single agenda individuals who can rally the troops, so to speak, on that agenda and don't really have the agenda of public education first in their mind being elected, maybe only once, but now they'll have several years to kind of wreak havoc on what's going on and perhaps try to undo things that other school boards voted upon. It could be anything from you decide to close a building or to reorganize or to do other kinds of things, eliminate programs if you, God forbid, have to, and they say, no, we're bringing that back. And they don't understand that when you push the balloon on this side, there's a reaction on the other end, or they don't care.
I agree. I also think there's kind of a trickle down that will begin to happen. You cannot run an organization when the governing body is dysfunctional. So over time, it does catch up with the reputation, community perception, and a school district that has a dysfunctional board, I believe, will begin to lose students because the community will lose confidence. However, I think another trickle down or perhaps unforeseen consequences, then it begins to affect the quality of the leadership of the school district that you hire. For example, if you have boards with single issue, I absolutely agree, single issue people that really don't care about the overall strategic direction, the long-term health of the district, they're just there for their issue, it's going to be harder and harder to find quality superintendents or first-line executive leadership in school districts. We already see some of that today. It's very hard to find superintendents who are talented and qualified. The pool, I mean, you can find them, but it's just not the same number of applicants that you would have found, say, 15 or 20 years ago. So the difficulty with boards, I think, does affect the long-term leadership in the school districts, too. And that concerns me.
Absolutely.
We need good brains. We need good talent in schools.
Carol Clino has been on the Utica Community School Board for 23 years, 21 of those as board president. Howard Wallach has served on the Farmington Public Schools Board since 2004. Thanks to both of you for giving us a sense of what it's like to be on a school board in Michigan. It was great to meet you. Thank you.
I have to congratulate Carol. 21 years as president is just amazing. I think I'm in my third or fourth term as president, and I thought that was a lot. You're amazing.
You know, I still love the work, though. I really do. It's been very rewarding, and despite all the things we said that makes it difficult, I still highly recommend people think about it because most of the time it's more rewarding than it is challenging.
Agreed.
Thanks to
both
of you.
And you meet some great people.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.